SF Youth Community Radio Station broadcasting live from Burnaby, BC.
Welcome to Canqueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And I am in the a truly lovely locale right now. I am in Victoria, BC, home of CFUV-FM. Mm-hmm. And it is damp and it is cold. And I will tell you something. We went outside yesterday and I was out for maybe 30 seconds, maybe a minute tops. Yes. And I turn to my friend Glenn and my face lit up and I said, I am cold. And I was so happy about this. it might be strange, but in Ottawa, when it's cold and your skin sort of shrinks onto your bones and it's mm-hmm. dry and, mm-hmm. you know, you feel like, you have to tell Tony Stark that you don't feel so good. You know, it's mm-hmm. just, it's not a great vibe. But this was like a deep bone chilling cold. And I was okay. like, why is my voice shivering? Like, what is happening? And it was that damp cold. And
it's
it reminded me of Wales, which is perpetually damp. Mm-hmm, So yeah, I was momentarily pleased.
Cold. Yeah. When I lived in Hong Kong, it was so, there was 2 months of the year that is so incredibly damp. It's just like the damp season, basically. When people put up posters around town, they just put them against a wall and rub their hand over it. There's no glue on the back. And you know there's no glue on the back because at the end of the damp season, everything just falls onto the street.
Oh, wow. So but they just go around and sweep them up?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's Hong Kong. I loved the place, and with all due respect, and I think everyone who's lived in Hong Kong would say the same thing, the place was a trash heap. It's kind of like, you know, the stereotype of New York. You know, it's disgusting, it's smelly, it's rude, it's in your face, and I miss it. So, I mean, it's damp. And me, who used to have childhood asthma, I love that cold damp. You know, like if you go into a walk-in freezer and it's just that, not cold damp, sorry, dry cold. Mm. And it's that dry cold that just makes your lungs blossom open.
Yeah, yeah.
That's sort of like when you lean into a freezer to get that one freezy from the bottom and you want that blue one and you lean in and your head is in the thing and you get that mouthful of cold freezer air.
We're going to move on. Later in the show, we have an interview with the unbelievably talented Reverend Sherry DeNovo, truly brilliant individual that I was able to speak to. We had lined up the interview for around Christmas. It's a conversation about queer folks and faith, although, you know, and our listeners, I'm sure you will appreciate this.
Yes.
It occurred to us that it was going to broadcast and be carried all over the place the week after Christmas. And nobody wants to hear Christmassy stuff after Christmas.
After Christmas, yeah.
So we did you a solid. We didn't put it out. But the conversation about queer folks and faith and sort of, you know, the things that happened with the Catholic Church in the last year, very, very interesting conversation. We've kept that. There may be the odd reference here and there to Christmas, but it is mostly a conversation on queer folks and faith. So that will be happening in a few moments later on in the show. But first of all, I want to talk about Madonna.
Oh, do we have to?
Not the Madonna. Well, I suppose she might be called the Madonna by some gays. But Madonna, the incredible musician who has, you know, a career spanning, you know, every decade ever.
So not the Madonna that you see in your toast, the Madonna that you see on MTV.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
She is at the center of a U.S. federal class action lawsuit.
Oh.
And do you want to guess why people are suing Madonna?
I genuinely don't know. I something to do with false advertising or something. Class action lawsuits, they rarely pass the sniff test in the U.S. They have a very low tolerance for them. So I'm willing to bet it has something to do with concert tickets or false advertising, or she was involved in some kind of a charity but didn't actually donate properly or something. I don't know.
We would never accuse her of falsely donating. Like, that's, you know, we that wouldn't be. But you were very, very, very close. So in a recent gig in New York State, Madonna's show was supposed to start at about 8:30 p.m. and then, you know, wrap up 2.5, 3 hours later. You know, it's a late night, but you can get home and do what you must. It didn't begin until 10:30 p.m.
Okay.
So a bunch of people have claimed that they had an early day at work, and the 1 a.m. finish time, because she was so late starting, meant that they, you know, weren't able to be as effective or available for work in the morning. Mm-hmm. And she, by being so late to her own concert, had caused them actual harm.
Okay.
So essentially, it's a case of negligent misrepresentation. Ah. She said, we're starting at this time, it'll end at this time. And it was actually multiple hours later that it actually started. Now, is this really about Madonna, or is it about concerts and tickets and events where it's like, yeah, you know, yeah, it'll start 8-ish, but it goes much later. You know, Madonna was on gay time.
It was 3 years ago, I think 4 years ago, when Eddie Izzard came to town, and you and I were talking about it. And in the end, I just looked up the start and finish times, and I said, I do not trust local transit to still be running when the event closes. And I do not trust my ability to get home before transit shuts down, because events like this, they tend to run half an hour to an hour late anyway. They can go later if there's like an encore, if there's an issue. And then it's just an issue of trusting local transit. And the place where it was scheduled to happen was in the middle of bloody nowhere, where they assume everyone has a pickup truck and they can 4x4 over the wild hills to get there. Not really, but that's what it feels like. So, I mean, I can only imagine sort of similar things. I can imagine being stranded in the middle of nowhere at 3 a.m. and just saying, well, I guess I'm sleeping in a bus shelter. Like, that can happen with events that do not finish on time. It's so weird, but yeah, no, you can't imagine being caused physical harm by a thing not closing on time if it's January at 4 a.m. and you're in the middle of nowhere and there's no way home and your battery ran out on your phone and now you can't call Uber to pick you up and there's no cabs. Like, it's just, you can imagine that kind of thing happening.
Well, it seems like Madonna's fans have simply run out of patience. This isn't the first time that she started 2 hours or more late. In her various tours, she is routinely on what's being coined Madonna time, which is typically about 2 hours late. In Melbourne, she didn't start the show. The doors didn't open until 11 p.m. She started at about 10 to 1 in the morning, and then it finished at 3 a.m. in the morning. Now, when you're expecting to start around 9:10-ish, and you stood there and you're waiting. But what boggles my mind is, it's Madonna. Like, surely she knows where the venue is. You know, she can get there. But well, it's a chronic issue. So yeah,
it's Live not Nation about Madonna. My thing is, does she not have handlers?
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're that big, it's not like you drive yourself to the venue. You're going to be in a bus with a load of people with you. You're going to have handlers. You're going to have a manager. You're going to have a, you know, somebody, some roadies of some kind or another, including staff and security who are with you to make sure you get there safely. You get there on time. You're taken care of. You're paid for your time. Blah blah blah. You're going to have people there. I mean, you and I have interviewed smaller acts. Don't want to say small acts, but smaller acts. And they had
smaller
staff
than Madonna, yeah.
Smaller than Madonna. And they had staff who made sure that everything happened on time. So I don't know. This is, when it's that chronic, it's more than just the woman. You know, there's something big going on.
But I think it's not just Madonna, like you said. I think it's a lot of musicians, you know, that think big gigs that don't start anywhere near on time. Anyway, the plaintiffs have alleged, and I quote, defendants engaged in unconscionable, unfair and or deceptive trade practices by offering to the public concerts that were promised to begin at 8:30 p.m., knowing that Madonna would most certainly not take the stage at the advertised time. So they're arguing that her personal track record of tardiness, which the company knew about, meant that they knowingly misadvertised the start time. And okay. I think that's sort of the crux of the class action lawsuit. Now, before we jump into a story, into the first song of the day, I wanted to talk briefly about a story that we had robustly rebuked last year. It was a ridiculous story that emerged mm-hmm. where allegedly students were identifying as a cat.
And demanding a cat litter box in the classroom.
None of it was true. Apparently in one school, in one place, there was a conversation about, I think, gender identity. And someone said, you know, what if I identify as a teapot or a cat? And that was enough. Well, nobody told Justin Henfrey, Oklahoma state representative. No one informed him that this was completely not real. And taking it as gospel, he introduced House Bill 3084, which, among various things, has, quote, the parent or guardian of a student in violation of this section shall pick up the student from the school or animal control services shall be contacted to remove the student. So just to be clear here, in Oklahoma, a man is so convinced that there mm-hmm. are furries and cats in schools that he is suggesting that animal control come and remove. Actual legislator. This is a man that passes laws in the state of Oklahoma.
I mean, the only thing I could say about that is at least they've got it covered if chupacabras turn out to be real.
This is true. Yeah.
But
you would need a student to identify as a chupacabra before it works. Okay.
Nobody identifies as a chupacabra. You just get bitten by one and you become it's werewolf rules, more or less. It's just North American werewolves. Yeah. Okay. Also werewolves. If it turns out someone's a werewolf, you know, we got that covered too. Sort of.
Really, Teen Wolf would have never been able to be recorded in Oklahoma. That's the gist I'm getting from this.
No basketball for Michael J. Fox is what you're saying.
Absolutely. Okay, we're going to play...
You're talking about the show, I'm talking about the movie, but anyway.
We're going to play Weather Vane by Clara Cloud, and we will be back with the interview with Reverend Sherry DeNovo just after this, and then we'll wrap up after that interview. So, like I said, this is Clara Cloud with Weather Vane, and we'll be back just after this.
On foggy window panes. And whenever the wind picks up, I take my feet into the ground and say that I'm not afraid of being swept away. Oh, what pretty lies these lips can say. Thunderous cries, voice from the sky calling.
Hello and welcome back to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith. Sebastian is indisposed. That happens occasionally. Now, I am very excited to have a conversation with one of my favorite people, the truly talented and remarkably established in the queer annals of time, the wonderful Reverend Sheridan Ovo. You may recognize her from the Radical Reverend on, I believe, Tuesdays at CIT 89.5 FM out of Toronto. Sherry, thank you so much for joining us today for our Christmas episode.
Of course, it's a pleasure, Luke.
Now, this has been a bit of a roller coaster year for folks of faith vis-a-vis the LGBTQ movement. I'm going to start off with what I think were the two biggest moments. And if you can just sort of let me know, how did that reverberate into Canadian, the Canadian landscape? So the big one that I think is, the Pope. We're going to start with the Pope. And he kicked off the year with a bang. He went to the Sudan with the Archbishop of Canterbury, the leader of the Church of Scotland, and they were talking a bunch of times. And his key thing was that laws that criminalize homosexuality are themselves a sin. In the context of a rash of new laws out of East Africa, that's a really bold position by the Pope. He followed it up with blessing trans folks, enabling trans folks to become godparents. And you recently reminded me that he'd also blessed the union of two people who are same sex.
He's opened the door. Very legalist language, but it did make international news, because basically what he's saying, and I don't have the exact wording in front of me at the moment, but he's saying as long as it's not interpreted as marriage, the blessings of people in unions is kind of conceivable. So, I mean, he kind of opened the door on it in a way that for the Vatican is pretty revolutionary, actually. But more to the point, I think down in Canada, our Ontario English Catholic Teachers Association and Catholic Teachers Associations across the country, basically, but here in particular, have been very forward thinking. Most Catholic schools have pride flags flying. They are mandated, because they're part of the public system, to have gay straight alliances, support groups for queer kids in schools. And the heads of Ontario English Catholic Teachers have been very upfront about coming to Queen's Park and standing with queer folk for various issues. So we've got them on record many, many times of us doing that. So there's hope. When I was asked to comment on that in CP24, what I said is this is kudos to the rank and file, really. This is kudos to the people in the pews. I mean, we know from confidential polling of Roman Catholic priests that about 50% of them identify as homosexual.
Wow.
And then many, many are sexually active, although they're not supposed to be. but I mean, at the end of the day, a change is a coming. Just let's put it that way. But don't expect any miracles anytime soon. meanwhile, the rest of us trudge forward. So, yeah.
I mean, I think you're absolutely right. There really is this groundswell of support for, progress and going back to what are fundamentally core Christian values. I think it was actually the leader of the Church of Scotland who said, when he was interviewed about these statements, the top Presbyterian, Ian Greenshields, he said that there is nowhere, and I quote, "There is nowhere in my reading of the four Gospels where I see Jesus turning anyone away." And then he goes on to say, "There is nowhere in the four Gospels where I see anything other than Jesus expressing love to whomever he meets."
Far more than that. I mean, for example, and to bring it back to Canada, in Canada, the United Church of Canada, the largest Protestant denomination in Canada, instituted by an act of government in 25, which is quaint now, but at any rate, Has been ordaining openly gay and lesbian people since 1988. Since same-sex marriage became legal, churches have been forming it. I did it on the cusp. I did the first one just before it was recognized by the courts in Ontario. But that's been a tradition. In terms of scripture, I do a whole presentation on the queer Bible, essentially. But suffice to say, Jesus, 2,000 years before Lady Gaga, Matthew 19:12 says, some are born that way. He's talking about eunuchs, but he's talking about trans folk, but he's obviously not talking about those who have been castrated if they're born that way, forcibly. And he's not talking, I don't think, just about intersex folk, because I don't think he's been examining genitals. He's looking at people who are not interested in heterosexual marriage. And the very first convert in Acts is a trans person of color, the Ethiopian eunuch, who Philip, the disciple, would not touch because at that point they were considered unclean. And so the trans eunuch, has to convince Philip to baptize them. And Philip does. This is the very first named convert in Acts. There's talks about, baptizing communities and blah, 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 blah before that. But this is a specific story captured by the great artists of the Renaissance, the Ethiopian eunuch, this black trans person. And really, it goes back to Genesis first. I always say we have a trans God because the oldest version of Genesis before the Adam and Eve version, the oldest creation story says, God created male and female in God's image, trans God. It's not a him. It's not a him, he. So, throughout scripture, queerness exists. And the texts of terror, as we call them, the texts that seem to indicate otherwise, can be very easily explained contextually. For example, Leviticus, 664 different rules, of which this is one. Well, why do we focus on that and not the other 663?
I think clamfish is a famous example.
Wearing clothes of mixed fibers is, so of the same order. So, obviously the Christian right, I always say hashtag Christian right is neither, is wrong, is simply wrong biblically. So even if you want to be a literalist, they're wrong. We talked before the show about the United Methodists in the States. The problem with international denominations, I guess we're lucky in that sense in Canada, we're not, which the United Methodists are, and the Anglicans are, right? So you've got kind of forward thinking places, and then you've got places where there's still laws in place against homosexuality, all have to be kind of accommodated by vote, right? That's the problem. And that's why the United Methodists, even though if you go down to the States, look for the pride flags flying over the churches, basically, you want to walk into. But many, many United Methodist churches and United Church of Christ, both our sister churches down there, are queer affirming. But but their denomination, did not vote that way, as neither did our Anglican church in Canada vote that way. Yet you can find Anglican churches with pride flags flying, right? Again, it's this problem of having to please everyone, or at least the majority of everyone.
I'm gonna focus a little bit now on the Anglican church, because there was a moment this year which I think really crystallizes this issue. And for those who aren't aware, the Church of England, I believe, is legally established in law in the UK, and they have a massive carve-out from a lot of laws just by virtue of the monarch being the head of the Church of England. We're going back to Henry VIII and the, throwing out the Pope and stealing all of the church property and divorcing his many, many, many wives. We're going all the way back to then. So in British law, the Church of England has a huge role. But the Church of England, i.e. the Anglican Church, has been having this push and pull on gay marriage. Now, gay marriage has been legal in the UK for years. And the fact that the Church of England does not perform gay marriages has been a major battle point. And what happened this year was MPs in the UK were openly discussing removing the legal protections of the Church of England unless they got their act together. You know, it's, and that I think is a pretty powerful moment. Needless to say, shortly afterwards, Church of England now is going to bless same-sex marriages, and they've suddenly discovered that they want to move forward on it. But it really kind of crystallized this moment of, you know, the Western world at least seems to have moved much further along on this. Is there? And this is a tricky question because I am aware of the sheer volume of, in particular, United States evangelist outreach into East Africa, into the churches in those areas, and that major influence that happens there. But there really is a almost two worlds of Christianity emerging, the sort of Western world and a much more fundamentalist sort of evangelist world that's got a real stranglehold over a lot of African churches, and then Anglican churches in Africa and so on and so forth. You know, what have you seen, you know, regarding that?
Well, I mean, the Christian right has always been kind of my nemesis, right? So when I did the first legalized same-sex marriage, and even before, I mean, I've always been debating folk, you know, that represented in Canada here, some of which have come over, like Michael Corrin, to the side of light over the years. But I mean, it's always been a battle. And essentially, it's just hatred masquerading as religion, which happens so often in all faiths. And that's what it is. It has nothing Christian about it. And there's nothing biblical about it. And I'm always happy to debate, but, you know, somehow they don't want to debate, you know, they just don't want to. I mean, the current and most deadly and horrific aspect of that is this new rise of trans hatred, of transphobia, that is part and parcel of the rise of fascism. And if we look at the 30s in Berlin, for example, which was a queer mecca in the 20s, before the Nazis came to power, I mean, they had an institute that performed, you know, sex reassignment surgery there. They had multiple queer clubs there. And the first people that were the targets when the Nazis came to power were those with disabilities and trans folk, even before Jews or communists or anybody else. So we've seen this picture before. We know why they're targeting them, because people aren't educated about it. There's so much misconception out there around trans folk and not in gender, non-binary folk, that has not been, and that's on us in our school systems. So it's an easy target, right? And there's not a lot of them. But it's happening, and it's happening in Canada. It's happening everywhere. Now, this is funded, by the way. I'm going to start sounding like a conspiracy, but in fact, it is. I mean, if you see some of these demonstrations that have happened in Ottawa, we've seen DeSantis people, we've seen Republicans there, convoy people are getting their money from somewhere. You see the rise over the right. You know, we've now had elections that have installed right-wing people in New Zealand and the Netherlands and Argentina. And guess what? It's going to happen in Canada too, with Poilievre, if the polls hold. So this is an international movement. Poilievre has talked about radical gender ideology, unquote, to quote him. So we're seeing where this is going, and the real lack of safety for trans folks. So, and the attempt, by the way, to divide the community, LB against, you know, QT kind of thing. And groomers, that term, you know, that, you know, gays against groomers. This is an organization or supposed organization that's been putting out literature around Ontario here. So, I mean, this is clearly aligned with forces that we don't want. I don't think anybody would want in a democracy. But I'm pointing it out because it's definitely backlash time, and it's definitely backlash time again.